Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Last Tuesday's primary election in North Carolina featured some major political upsets on both sides of the aisle and a lot of information to glean and dissect as we look forward to November. After the election, I caught up with one of our News and Views regulars, Catawba College political scientist Michael Bitzer, to get his assessment of what happened and what's next. Well, Dr. Michael Bitzer, welcome to News and Views. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's always my pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, you've had some time, a little bit of time now, to digest the primary election results from this past Tuesday. I've got lots of questions for you, but I wonder just at the outset whether you have any overall take on these results in North Carolina.
I think the biggest surprise certainly was out of the 9th Congressional District with Mark Harris's upset of Robert Pittenger by a little over 800 votes. Folks have to remember 2 years ago, Pittenger beat Harris by 134 votes. So it was as competitive, I think, as what a lot of people thought. We believe that incumbency has some built-in advantages, but apparently it was not enough to overcome what Harris was able to put on the ground. The other thing that really surprised me were the numerous upsets of incumbents at the state legislative level. Folks like Joel Ford, folks like Justin Burr. I think, you know, there are very localized probably explanations for what is going on, but it did seem as a higher than usual sense of incumbents losing in the primary election. And for a lot of officials, particularly at the very local level, talking about maybe sheriff, maybe county commissioners, maybe DAs, this was the general election. Right. Within so many counties, you have the counties moving towards one party over the other that when it comes November, they run unopposed. So it was really with barely 15% voter turnout statewide, maybe higher in some areas, lower than in others. This was the general election, and not a whole lot of people showed up to cast their votes.
Yeah, that's probably one of the most distressing aspects of the election was the low turnout. One might have hoped for a little better, although that's pretty much the tradition with these primaries, unfortunately, especially when there's no presidential or big Senate race.
Exactly.
So getting back to the Harris and Pittenger race, we're sort of struck by the fact that, is it Dan McCready, the fellow that's won the Democratic nomination,
Correct. Actually
got more votes than the two of them combined. It's a right Republican-leaning district, right? So is that an indication that this fellow is a formidable opponent for Mark Harris in the fall?
I think looking at it just at that level, one would tend to think maybe there is Democratic enthusiasm, maybe there is Democratic energy on the ground. I went back and looked at the district as a whole, and there were three counties that had sheriff's races going on. And when you looked at those three counties, the sheriff's race actually drew more votes on the Democratic side than did votes cast for the congressional contest between McCready and Kano. So I would venture a guess that a lot of those numbers, and it looked pretty significant. I mean, 45,000 votes were cast in total across the 9th Congressional District for the Democratic candidates, and I think it was about maybe in the mid-30s for Harris and Pittenger and the other Republican candidate. But those sheriff's races tended to drive, in those particular counties, Anson, Robeson, and Scotland, tended to drive the voters. And there was almost a kind of reverse roll-off effect that there were actually fewer votes cast at the congressional level on the Democratic primary than for the sheriff. So maybe those Democratic numbers were helped by competitive sheriff's races in those counties. Now, we have to admit that there is Democratic energy. You see it, you know, in terms of enthusiasm in any public poll. Democrats tend to have a higher level than Republicans. The advantage that Republicans typically have in this state, in particular in midterms, is that they show up at a higher vote turnout rate in the general election than registered Democrats. So we may see, like in 2006, an almost equal percentage of registered Democrats and registered Republicans showing up this fall, which could portend to a Democratic wave if you want to buy into that. Mm-hmm. I'm still doubtful as to how big that wave is in this state, but certainly there's something going on. And I think in the 9th district on the Democratic side, it benefited from three counties having very competitive sheriff's races.
This is why we pay you the big bucks to do this kind of analysis, these kinds of details. You don't get anywhere else. No, it's really, I mean, it's helpful. It's enormously helpful. I appreciate you doing that. A lot of people are talking about the year of the woman. We've had some compelling women candidates arise up, both in the congressional races and in the state legislative races. Linda Coleman, who faced a tough, well-financed challenger in the 2nd Congressional District. Kathy Manning rising up to go against Ted Budd in the fall. Any thoughts on that?
I think certainly you cannot discount the cultural awakening that is going on with things like the Me Too movement. And that is going to have direct impact on the political aspects of our country. And I think with all the recognition that the Me Too movement has brought, that all of the scandals that have been, you know, front and center in terms of national attention and even within North Carolina as well, I think that is only going to have a tremendous spillover effect into the campaigns. Certainly Linda Coleman, certainly Kathy Manning. It's going to be interesting to see how those dynamics are captured and played by the Democrats, and in particularly how Republicans are going to have to respond, because they are going to be on the defensive. I'm not saying that that's going to be the only issue. I mean, we've got several months before the general campaign, and, you know, if you can tell me what the issues of the day are going to be going into the fall campaign each and every day, I've probably got an NCAA bracket that I want you to revise for me from this past time. But it is certainly going to be powerful, and women tend to show up to vote more than men. That's just a common fact. 52 to 53% of the electorate are going to be female registered voters in this state. So it is going to be a fascinating dynamic to watch. We've heard this term, the year of the woman, in the past. I think this year is another example of that.
You mentioned the possibility of a blue wave, so-called blue wave, or maybe a blue ripple in November. As you say, it's impossible probably to predict, but we'll go ahead and try anyway. Some of the issues that could maybe deflate that balloon for Democrats in the fall. What's standing out there that could turn around? I mean, it seems to me that people are ultimately motivated to a great extent by the presence of Donald Trump. It feels to me like it spills through all the elections. It's what's motivating Democrats and progressives, the ones that are turning out, to get out.
Well, I should say that, you know, after 2016, a lot of political scientists, myself included, had to note that the rules were broken, that the norms that we generally associate with things in our election cycles really got upended, and I had to rewrite a lot of my lectures regarding elections at that point. But I think, you know, the standard is that midterms serve as referendums on the party in the White House. And if you look at generic question polls, if you look at enthusiasm, if you look back in history, it is very rare for a president's party to gain seats in either the U.S. House or the U.S. Senate in midterm elections. It's just a natural pendulum swing away from the party in terms of the White House. And I think with poll numbers stuck in the low 40s, this doesn't help the Republicans that Trump's poll numbers are at the rates that they are. If you go back to the midterm elections for Barack Obama, he was sitting at 44% in terms of job approval ratings right before the midterms, and they lost double-digit seats in the House in both instances. So I think, you know, in congressional districts like the 13th with Kathy Manning, like with the 9th that we've talked about, potentially the 2nd with George Holding and Linda Coleman now in that race, things are going to start to move much more into battleground status than we would ever think, because these districts have been so gerrymandered, and we as voters have gerrymandered ourselves, have sorted ourselves into very much pockets of one party over the other. But it looks like this midterm is going to be a referendum on the president. could there be, you know, a breakthrough with North Korea? Could there be war in the Middle East? All of those kind of dynamics could happen. Could the economy slip into a mild recession by the end of the year? All of these things are things we just can't predict going forward.
One thing I feel confident in predicting is that we're going to see a lot of television ads come the next few months. And so it probably will be an active political season. Whether it's ultimately a productive one, it remains to be seen. But it does seem as if we're going to be inundated over the next several months with candidates running in every race, every state house race. It should be an enormously active fall campaign.
I think so. I think we may set some records in some regards. I think, you know, for those folks who live in the Charlotte media market, be prepared for the 9th district just to absolutely blow up your TV screens. I think for those folks in the triad are going to get hit with a 13th congressional district. And in some of these, you know, state legislative districts, we may see records broken there as well in terms of the competitiveness and the potential for pickups by Democrats into the state legislature. It's what we call a blue moon election cycle here in North Carolina. There's no major statewide race. We got a state Supreme Court race, but nobody's going to really pay attention to it. So it's all going to be hyper localized for the congressional and for the state legislative races. And we may see some real, you know, financial fundraising and expenditures broken in this election cycle.
It may be painful at times, but it will be fascinating to watch. And we sure appreciate your doing this for all the people of North Carolina and keeping us so well informed. We look forward to having you on the show again before the election to see where we're at, maybe this summer.
Sounds great.
Thank you, Dr. Bitzer.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week's edition of News and Views. Be sure to check us out on the web and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, I'm Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.